Good afternoon. You are tuned in to another episode of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program, each and every week, I find and feature themes relating to Appalachian culture, and then I play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Well, today I've got a really great show lined up for you. If you tuned in last week, you may remember that I talked about Scottish history with my guest, Jennifer Leko. Well, today I've got some more Scottish history lined up for you, ready to go. No particular reason, it just worked out this way to talk to two guests here this month about Scotland and its history. So today I'll be talking with president of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games, Stephen Quillen. He'll be talking more about some history of this annual event, how it all got started, and about the Highland Games. Scottish Highland Games are actually celebrated in many countries all across the globe, not just in Scotland or Ireland, but right here in Appalachia. And they act as a way to connect people and are a celebration of Scottish and Celtic culture, especially that of the Scottish Highlands. So please stick around, hang out with me, and stay tuned this hour here on today's program. It's going to be great, filled with a lot of really great stuff. First up, let's get some rather fitting, as always, music going. I've got a bagpipe tune here lined up for you, ready to go. Appropriate for any occasion. You're listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. Thank you.
wrap me up gently and bury me here. Lead me to where I will lay in a dream. Bury me now in the deep salt sea. Bury me now in the deep salt sea.
There from Emerald Ray, and right before that we heard a bagpipe tune, fitting again for any and I'm just gonna say it, every occasion. When is it not a good time to listen to bagpipe music? The Oak Table by EJ Jones there. So we are going to get into an interview with Steve Quillen, who is the president of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. We are just featuring a lot about Scottish history this month here on Mountain Song and Story. Last month, we talked about the Scotland connections with Appalachia, and today we're going to be diving in to some more of those connections. The Grandfather Mountain Highland Games takes place in North Carolina, right here in Appalachia, and it's just so interesting to learn about some of this history. So we're going to go on and learn about that history with my guest here. Here in just a sec. Let's get on into that interview. Okay, so joining me now is Stephen Quillen, president of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games, which are coming up on July 8th through the 11th. The mission of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games is to carry on and promote the annual Grandfather Mountain Highland Games and Gathering of the Scottish Clans to foster and restore interest in traditional dancing, piping, drumming, athletic achievement, music, and Gaelic culture, and to establish scholarship funds to assist students from Avery County High School to study the American colleges and universities. So welcome, Steve. It's so great to have you here, and thank you for taking some time to talk with me today.
Thank you, Tony. I really appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, so first, tell me a little bit about the history of these games. What is the story about why they are here in Appalachia, and how did they all get started? You know, I've known a lot about these games for a while, and I've never been able to go, but it's so interesting that they're right here in the mountains of Appalachia. So tell me why.
Well, that's interesting that you've never been able to go. My parents took me in 1968. In 1969, I could drive, so I came back every year since. So 52 years for me. My children have never not been to the games. My grandchildren have never not been to the games. So you asked about the history. This will be our 65th anniversary. Last year, of course, 2020 was meant to be the 65th anniversary, but we had to postpone the games because of COVID. And so we're all really pining to get up on that meadow on the side of Grandfather Mountain and come together once again. The games were founded in 1956, and the first games was held on a Sunday, August 19, 1956. The games were founded by Donald Francis Donald McDonald and Agnes McCrae Morton. Agnes McCrae Morton had the property at Grandfather Mountain, and Donald McDonald was a newspaper reporter for the Charlotte News. And Donald had been to Scotland in 1954 to trace his roots, and he went to the Braemar Highland Games. The Braemar Games are the ones that you always associate with the Queen and Prince Philip and Prince Charles all kilted up and coming in and taking their seats. So Donald went to that games, and he came home to Charlotte, and he wrote effusively about his trip to Scotland, his family roots. He wrote about Robert Burns. He founded a Robert Burns Club. He wrote about the MacDonald clan, founded the MacDonald Clan Society, and he wrote about the Braemar Highland Games. And Agnes read his articles. She had known about the existence of Highland Games, and she knew she was very interested, McCrae, in her McCrae ancestry. And so she contacted Donald, and they got together with the idea of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. They began work in 1955 and worked diligently until August 19, 1956 to hold the games. Donald put on a kilt and would go out on the street in Charlotte and sell tickets to the Black Watch concert. He had booked the Black Watch to Charlotte to raise funds for the first games. And he would go out on the street in Charlotte in his kilt in 1955 and sell tickets at lunch. And so between the two of them, they pulled in enough volunteers and put the thing on, and they expected, you know, they might get 200 or 300 people. They got 5 clan societies and somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 people. It was successful beyond their wildest dreams.
Wow.
They set the games for August 19th because that's a special day in Scottish history. If you're a Jacobite supporter, that was the day in 1745 that Bonnie Prince Charlie raised his standard at Glenfinnan. And so they picked August 19th to celebrate that. The next year, in 1957, the games was held as a single day. The crowd was even bigger, and so they just decided they went for it. And in 1958, the games turned into a 2-day event and lasted a 2-day event until, 30 years ago or so, when the games added Thursday and Friday to the agenda. And so and we moved to July for a number of reasons, but the second full weekend in July is the traditional date for the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. If you go around any place in the country now, any place in the U.S., you'll find somebody in just about every state that can tell you when the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games are held. We're really proud of the fact that we're, without question, the most famous Highland Games in the United States. We may be the most famous Highland Games in the world, but we really have a, in the Highland Games world, we put a pretty big footprint down.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, man, I didn't realize 65 years almost. That is a long time. Do you know a little bit about the history of games pre, 1950. I know they come from a rich Scottish background, of course, but what is the structure of the games look like, and how has it differed from when they began in the 1950s here at Grandfather Mountain to, today's games?
Well, there were games in the United States that predate the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. There's a games in Detroit that's quite old. There were games in Central Park in New York City in the late 1880s. And there was a very famous Scottish athlete called Donald Denny who came over, and he was renowned around the world. He was an extremely accomplished Scottish athlete. And at that time, the Scottish heavy athletics, those people were as famous as Olympians, perhaps more famous than Olympians. And so there were games that predated Grandfather. Grandfather is the oldest games in the Southeast. And with our setting and our games at Grandfather is dedicated to the clan societies. So we are not the largest games in the world. We're not even the largest games in the United States. To tell you the truth, we're not even the largest games in the Southeast. That honor belongs to the Stone Mountain Highland Games in Stone Mountain, Georgia, right outside Atlanta. But we do have the largest number of Scottish families and Scottish clans represented at the games of any place in the world. We'll be well over 100 societies again in 2021. And so that exceeds other games, usually by a pretty wide margin.
Wow. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the Scottish clans. What their families, am I correct? I'm a big fan of course, of the show Outlander. I know you probably know that program. I know a lot of people know that. And one of the seasons is actually based near Grandfather Mountain. So I think these newer, TV shows really help gain new interest in something like these games. But
very much. I have to say that the based on Grandfather Mountain was very loosely done.
Okay.
We don't erect a triple story stag twig and light it on fire or anything like that. The ride around the mountain in the car and so forth was pretty good. That was but yeah, you could come over and visit with the Frasers. They're in full force at Grandfather Mountain every year. So the Scottish clans, first of all, Scottish clans are part of a territory. They were Celtic. They rose up in the Celtic system of what was government in Scotland. There was a pretty weak king in Scotland. He had some territory in the east of Scotland. The Lord of the Isles was a MacDonald. Had most of the territory in the western, in the Hebrides, in the western area of Scotland. And in those times, the clans themselves were distinct territories. So the MacDonalds had lands, and the MacLeods had lands, and the MacLarens had lands, and the Campbells had lands, and so forth. A lot of the clan wars that you read about in Scotland occurred in that time, and it was over land. They were either trying to expand or steal somebody's livestock or that sort of thing. And it was so the family connections in Scotland are very deep and very important. And it's one of the reasons that Scotland had a really hard time with unity, because these clan wars just often couldn't be put aside to unite for what was a Scotland. And so the clans basically are in the middle and north of Scotland. The families that come from the borders and the families that come from the Scottish lowlands were not clans. They were families. They may have had chiefs, but they weren't known as clans. In the Celtic system, the chief had certain legal authority. He could marry you. He could give you a plot of land for your turnip patch. He could tell you what plot of land, what order you were going to be in the plot of land that was rotated for the communal good, and so forth. And most importantly, he could call you to war. And if you lived on his land, you lived on his zip code, then you were bound to him and bound to his cause, and you would go to war. If you didn't go to war, he'd burn your house down.
Yeah, you don't want that. Yeah.
No.
Just wondering how, you know, whenever Appalachia is full of so many diverse people, and a big group of people is, of course, people from Scotland and Germany and Ireland and all these places. I think everyone that I probably know has some kind of a Scottish connection. Can you talk a little bit about like that group of people coming over here into Appalachia, and how might their like structure, if they had, let's say if they were a Scottish clan or a family and they came over here, and how different that must have been for them to just navigate the world? Or was it kind of like they brought part of their culture with them and kind of did what they were doing over there?
They did indeed bring part of their culture with them. There was Gaelic spoken in services, church services in North Carolina, well up until the 1950s. So for a little history, around 1600, Queen Elizabeth felt that it would be a good idea to take some of those troublesome Scots and implant them in what we now know as Northern Ireland, and use that technique to suppress some of those troublesome Irish. And so that's always been a great tactic of the English, divide and conquer. And so those people became what we often speak about today. Those families became what we say is Scots Irish. Mm. And they had 40-year leases, and they supplanted the Irish Catholics, and they were landed as Scottish Protestant families, given 40-year leases. And when those leases expired, up went the prices. And so rather than hang out there, as the English had hoped that they would do, these people were more than happy to be recruited by, say, William Penn, who was trying to build a colony in Pennsylvania. And he needed someone as a buffer between the Native American tribes, the troublesome Native American tribes in the western part of Pennsylvania, and his cherished Quaker recruits that William Penn was building Pennsylvania around. And so he went for the Scots-Irish. And for those people, they came into Philadelphia, got on wagons, and went west. And when they hit the mountains, most of them turned south, and they filtered into southwestern Virginia and western North Carolina, and then began to move east. But most of the people that are native to the Appalachian Mountains are families that were Scots-Irish. Roughly the same time, maybe 80 or 100 years later, the Highland migration began to North Carolina. In the earlier years of that, which was in the 1730s, late 1730s, most of that was driven by economic pressure. Then there was the Jacobite Rising of 1745 with Bonnie Prince Charlie and his standard, and that was concluded on Culloden Moor on April 16th, 1746. And then the Hanoverian government, the English government, suppressed the clans. They took the clan lands. They seized them for the government, and the chiefs had no power and so forth. And so the economic conditions got worse and worse, and Highlanders began to migrate to North Carolina in great numbers, eastern North Carolina. They came into Wilmington. They came to what they call the Cape Fear Settlement, which we now know as Fayetteville. They came to Bennettsville, South Carolina, and up the PD River and all around. So from the standpoint of Scottish migration, North Carolina was settled from both ends to the middle. So Charlotte is older than Raleigh. And that's unusual in most states because the migration came from the ocean inward. There are twice the number of Scottish descendants in North Carolina that will lay their head down on pillows tonight when they go to sleep than are in the whole country of Scotland.
Holy cow.
In those days, pre-colonial days, the Big Scots populations in the New World were in North Carolina and Nova Scotia, as you might add, New Scotland. Mm-hmm. So that's the background for the Scottishness that's so prevalent in North Carolina.
Yeah. Oh man, wow, that's really interesting. I know a lot about people coming here, but it's so great to have someone else be so knowledgeable and explain that in such a great, succinct way.
An interesting thing to me, when the War of Independence was brewing, North Carolina had a Scottish governor, and not being real stupid, he could look out and read the tea leaves and see that there was trouble. There was trouble coming. And so he was ordered by the crown to raise a huge militia. And the idea was they knew that the settlers in New England were not going to be controlled. And they were very afraid of unrest in Virginia. But they thought South Carolina was a real solid seat of loyalists. And so they told the governor of North Carolina to raise a 20,000-man militia to be a buffer to cut off the South. He tried to do that, and he went to the Highland families that were still in the Cross Creek area, and he enlisted many of them, and he recruited many more of them to North Carolina. They came to North Carolina in return for 400 acres or 600 acres and an oath of fealty. They signed an oath to support the king. Mm-hmm. These were men who had opposed the king or the king's father in 1745, many of them, but they swore allegiance in 1770 or whatever year it was that they were being recruited, including Flora MacDonald's husband. Flora MacDonald, the great Scottish heroine who had Bonnie Prince Charlie out and kept him from arrest, lived in North Carolina with her husband and her children. And her husband, who was a very accomplished military officer, cast his lot with the royalists. They thought that the old clan allegiances would hold sway for those people in the western part of the state. In other words, if the Campbells in the eastern part of the state were going to be royalists, they could bring the Campbells in the western part of the state with them, that those family connections would hold. They didn't hold. Those Scots-Irish people had been gone from Scotland for 70 years, whatever the time was, and it didn't hold. And so what you had was mostly loyalists in the eastern part of North Carolina and patriots in the western part of North Carolina. That culminated in a battle down near Wilmington at a place called Moore's Creek, where the battle was all Scots, eastern North Carolina Scots against western North Carolina Scots, and all the battle commands were in Gaelic.
Oh, and wow.
They charged with broadswords and so forth. And the people in the western North Carolina, in the west of North Carolina, were victorious. And the governor of North Carolina thought it would be a good idea to leave his palace in New Bern and skedaddle to New York. And that's just what he did. The militia to cut off the South never materialized. The story about, independence and coming across South Carolina and turning and chasing the British all across North Carolina to Yorktown. And, that militia to cut them off never materialized.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about how long you've been involved with the games. Let's go back. We've got a little bit of the history laid down for our listeners. Now let's talk a little bit about what the games entail. So how long have you been involved, and you're the current president? How long have you been the president?
I was elected president in July of 2019. I've been involved with the games for a long time. I'm a member of Clan McLaren, and the people who come and run clan tents for us are known as conveners, because they convene the family, they convene the meeting, they convene the reunion, so forth. And I ran a tent at Grandfather Mountain for Clan McLaren, my wife and I, for, 25 years or something like that. And then I was asked to serve on the board. And I don't know actually how long I've been on the board, maybe 10 years, something like that. And I was vice president for a number of years, and then voted into the presidency. We try the board of trustees at Grand Front Mountain has all the people that are on the board have basically come up through the games. Some of them started off driving in stakes and wrapping rope around them, and some of them started off in clan tents like me. Sandy Jones started off running the piping and drumming. So we've got people who have background in all the events that are represented on the board of trustees. And Grand Front Mountain has many, many events. We are possibly, we may not be, but I think we might possibly be the last Highland Games in the United States that still has a Gaelic tent. So you can go in that tent for Gaelic instruction, and they will pass out papers, and you can sing songs in Gaelic with pronunciation aids and so forth.
Whoa, that's nuts.
We have a Clarsach tent. For you, that'd be a harp. We have a Scottish fiddle tent. We have a full range of athletics. We have a traditional hill climb that's called the Bear. It begins at 7 p.m. on Thursday night. We have a marathon that's been run for 52 years. We have the Atlantic International Highland Dance Championships. We have sheep herding. We have more modern Scottish entertainment. We have ballad singers in Celtic rock and traditional Scottish music performers, two stages of that for three full days. And then one of the special things I love about Grandfather, the many things that we started that have percolated out and spread themselves to other games across the country. For example, Thursday night at dark, we have the torchlight ceremony. And that you saw on the Outlander program, when all the families present send one representative out, he lights a torch, walks to the center where we collect the torches, and announces, the Andersons are here, the McDougals are here. And it gives me chill bumps just to talk about it. I love that ceremony. I've been going all my life, and I just absolutely love it. First at Grandfather. On Sunday, we have a worship service on the field that begins at 10 o'clock. And at the conclusion of that, we have a kirking of the tartans ceremony. So the clans send one representative up with their tartan flag, and that flag is blessed at the end of that ceremony. And then they parade those flags around our track. Everything at Grandfather Mountain takes place within that track. So it's much like a three-ring circus. And then at about 11:30, we mass all the representatives out of the clan tents who want to march, and they all line up, and we go in alphabetical order, each clan sporting as much of their tartan as they can, and we have our parade of tartans. And that is, if I say so myself, that is a really special event, and it's probably the most photographed Island Games event in the United States, even more than the Caber Toss. So you'll see.
Is that something that, like as a festival goer or a viewer, it kind of feels like you're almost taking part in like a Scottish clan family's, family in a sense. Is that something that viewers are kind of, or festival goers are kind of in another place, and then all of your, like the families are kind of in a more centered place, or is it just kind of something you can go to as like anybody can go to and have a good time, I guess, and learn about the history and the culture?
So it's the latter.
Okay.
The first tent you come to when you come through our, when you come under our beautiful arch and through our main entrance, the first tent you come to is, how do I find my clan? And so you can go up as Shirley Thomas from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there will be representatives there who will help you with your family connections and they will steer you to the McThomas tent.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Or wherever it is that you know, if your last name's Taylor, they'll send you to the Cameron tent. And so as a visitor, the clan tents are a double row of tents that line our track, and you go to what we call tent row and clan row, and you find your family. And there you can talk to people about your own family history. You can join the society. And the way that these are society tents, the way that works is being a member of a Scottish clan or a Scottish family is an accident of birth. If you're born as a Cameron, you're part of the Cameron clan. You don't have to join a Cameron society. But if you do join a clan Cameron society, you will find many ways to help support the clan Cameron. You can also find many ways to help support Highland Games, but more specifically, your own family connections. And that is the backbone of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games, all those clan tents. And it was intended to be that way from the start. That's what Donald and Agnes had as a shared vision. And we've honored that right through, and we'll never drop that.
Wow.
The official name of the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games is the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games and Gathering of Scottish Clans.
All right, folks, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. We have been talking with Steve Quillen on today's show all about the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games, the Scottish Highlands traditions in Scots-Irish customs. It's been a fabulous and informative interview so far, and we're going to get back on into the second part of that interview here in just a second. We also just heard a tune from Will McMorrin called The Generator. You may have heard his music before over at ETSU, being involved with the Old Time Bluegrass and Country Music Studies program. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get back on into the second part of our interview with Steve Quillen.
whenever you go to the Highland Games as well, it's not just observing some of the athletic events or some of the other things like hearing music, but you can also hear some of the stories of like actual Scottish history. And I know that that has been scaled down a little bit this year due to COVID, but tell me a little bit about what you can expect if you hear some of those stories.
Well, another thing that the Grandfather Mountain did at one of our first is that several years ago, we founded what we call a Scottish Cultural Village. The Scottish Cultural Village is a tent that seats 200 people, and we do a lecture series Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we bring experts from around the world on a variety of topics that could be how to play the bagpipe. If you took a bagpipe apart, what would you see in it? To Scottish-edged weaponry. We've had a program on period Scottish dress for ladies, including the underwear. That was a very popular one. And so that thing has grown in popularity so much that we have like 240 people attend a 200-person session. The sessions are different. They're basically in hour slots, and they're really serious scholars who come and make these presentations, and it's turned out to be just a wonderful thing. People just love that. And there's no fluff in these things. This is just the unvarnished truth, the presentation of Scotland's history and her culture. We could not have it this year because when I spoke to the state health people in North Carolina, we have to drop the flaps on the tent because they use overhead projectors and stuff. And that looked a lot like a giant indoor event to them on account of it was only with no ventilation. So by the time the governor dropped the order, it was too late to line up people. And as it turned out, we couldn't have gotten the people anyway, because we've had to change up. Our dance judges can't come from Scotland. So we've gotten American dance judges this year. At this point, our chieftain of the games, Alexander Matheson of Matheson, is likely to have to be a no-show because he can't get into the United States. Mm-hmm. I read this morning that they're going to lift that on July 17th. You already mentioned our last day is July 11th. So
yeah,
we've graciously gotten a young chief of Clan Morrison who lives in New Hampshire to come down, and he's very graciously agreed to fill in. Sorry about that. I'm in the games office, so it's hopping here.
I imagine it is, yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Tony, because that's a program of which I am extremely proud. I think that's really a valuable program for people who want to learn.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about what impact do you feel that you all are making here in the Southern Appalachian region of the United States? You know, it's so important that these games are here to represent Scottish culture and history and have other people who might not know about it come and learn about it. People who do know about it come and celebrate it. Why do you feel, what impact is it making here in this region?
Why is it so important? Grandfather Mountain is a nonprofit. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And when you read our mission statement, the last sentence in the mission statement is incredibly important to the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games. And that is the college scholarship support for Avery County, North Carolina students. Avery County is a economically disadvantaged county. There are about 18,000 residents in Avery County. About 6,000 of them don't have access to the internet even today. And so the economic footprint that we put in Avery County is massive. The economic footprint that we put in the surrounding counties is measured by the state of North Carolina to be about $3.5 million.
Wow.
They count noses and multiply that by some amount of money. And on average, they say that's how you calculate the economic footprint. So those are their numbers, not mine. But we are the largest summer festival in Western North Carolina. We are fully self-sufficient. We receive not $1 of support from the state of North Carolina in terms of direct financial support or free advertising or anything else. We must be quite a blessing for those folks, because we ask them for nothing and they give us nothing. And so we're fully self-sustaining and quite happy to be so. We're able to do that. We draw people on average. We used to do quite a bit of surveying, and in the past 3 years or so, we've done some more surveying. And it was interesting that the dynamics and everything of the surveys were about the same 10 years apart. We on average draw people from 26 states, 4 Canadian provinces, and 4 foreign countries. The obvious foreign countries are Scotland, England, Australia, and New Zealand. But we get, and I don't really count Canada, I guess 5 if we counted the Canada, but we have lots of visitors from Canada. But a 26 state draw that's a really big deal for a Scottish Highland Games in the United States. And we'll draw people from Oregon and California, and we don't draw as many people from the Midwest. If I looked at the migration patterns, what I may find is that there are many more people of Scottish descent on the East Coast and on the West Coast than are in the middle of the country, but I don't know that. We draw heavily from the Southeast, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, lots of Scots in Georgia, James Oglethorpe.
We are about out of time here on this hour, but I got a few more quick questions to ask you. One, where can people go to learn more about what you're doing? Where can they go to learn about the games?
We have a website, gmhg.org, and that's where I'd start. The other place I'd start is with a ticket and attending the games and buy a program.
And there you go.
You come to the games and you go into one of those clan tents or just stop and visit 2 or 3 of them, even if you don't have a family connection, you're going to come away with a wealth of knowledge. Those people running those clan tents know what they're doing. They know their family. At Grandfather Mountain, you know, kinship is obvious, right? Right? The McThomases are going to take care of the McThomases. But at Grandfather Mountain, we have another sentiment that's prevalent around Clan Row that I refer to as clanship. And those clans look out for each other. If somebody's having trouble getting their exhibits set up, they'll go help them. If they need food, they'll take them food. You can get the occasional dram in the back of the clan tents. Sometimes it's not so occasional. That's another thing that's a great educational opportunity at Grandfather Mountain. Our spirit sponsor is Glen Morangy, which is a great Highland single malt. And Glen Morangy and Ardbeg, which is a great island malt, are owned by the same people. So Glen Morangy comes and we feature those two brands. And we have whiskey tastings and lectures on whiskey, the manufacture of whiskey, the history of whiskey, why whiskeys taste different from one another. All that's available at Grandfather Mountain. So we're all about educating people. I don't think you can come to the games at Grandfather Mountain and not learn something. I don't think it's possible.
See, I feel like I could. I didn't even ask you about the whiskey. I feel like we could have had a whole conversation just about learning about that.
You know, it's strange. A lot of people know all about wines. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about wines, but I can tell you a lot about whiskeys.
Well, and I have another thing I wanted to ask you. When we talked initially, you mentioned a little bit about the Carter family connection, and I was just hoping that you could just quickly share you told me you heard the story of Mother Maybelle coming to Bristol and getting a flat tire, but you heard it from her, didn't you?
Yeah, but it wasn't just a flat tire. I think she told me they had about 5 flat tires. It took them all day to get. So the Carters were from Macy Springs, and my great grandparents on 2 sides of my family, the Quillens and the Eppersons, were both from Macy Springs, and so I knew Maybelle Carter probably up to when I was about 20. I actually don't remember when she died, sadly, but I knew her well, and my father dated June Carter a little bit as before he went off to the war. And anyway, they were just great. I don't think I ever met Sarah, and if I met AP, I sadly cannot remember it. But I certainly knew Maybelle, and yeah, she told me the story of going over to record in the furniture store, and you know, your program is all about that, Ralph Peer and the recording machine and so forth. And of course, she was a self-taught guitar player, and I mean, you know her music as well as I do. It's timeless. It's absolutely timeless. You mentioned it has made me think that I'm going to, when I leave here, I'll go home and pull down Hello Stranger and listen to it.
That's a good one. Yes. I just love that, you know, the world just seems to be such a small place, and every corner, you know, you find a connection. So it's great that you have that connection. You actually knew her, and it's so great that you got to hear that story, the story of the whole Bristol Sessions, which is the whole reason why we're here, the birthplace of country music. It's great that you actually got to hear that firsthand. So I love that story. So
Tony, this is living proof of why you should behave when you go away from home. Somebody may know you.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure talking with you today here on the program. We are about out of time, but thank you so much for sharing some history about Scottish history and some information about the games. And I encourage everyone, we'll have a link posted so where people can go learn more about them after the show today. But I thank you again for taking the time to speak with me, and good luck on the games when they're coming up. I'm planning on coming this year. I don't have anything going on that weekend, so I'm planning on being there.
You come around to the grandstand and find me.
Okay.
I really look forward to meeting you in person. And thank you so much for having me, and thank you for giving us this platform to share what I think is the most wonderful Scottish festival in the world. I've been to 26 different Highland games in my life. And wow. I know this is going to sound completely prejudiced to all your visitors, all your listeners, but Grand Final Mountain's the best Highland games I've ever been to, bar none, including Scotland.
I believe it. Thanks again, Steve.
See you, Tony. Thank you.
Put your loving hand in mine.
Hello, stranger.
Put your loving hand in mine.
You are a stranger,
and you're a pal of mine. Get up, rounder. Let a working man lay down.
Get up, rounder.
Let a working man lay down.
You are a rounder,
but you're all out and down. Time. I ride 6 and 4 streetcars.
Oh, every time.
I ride 6 and 4 streetcars.
I can see my baby.
He's been through the bar. She bowed her head. She waved both hands at me.
She bowed her head.
She waved both hands at me.
I'm prison bound.
I'm longing to be free. Troubles are like mine.
Oh, I'll see you.
When your troubles are like mine.
Oh, I'll see you.
When you haven't got a dime. Weeping like a willow. Mourning like a dove.
Weeping like a willow.
Mourning like a dove.
There's a girl up the country
that I really love. Thank you. loving hand in mine.
Hello, stranger.
Put your loving hand in mine.
You are a stranger,
and you're a pal of mine.
The Carter family there with Hello Stranger. Steve just mentioned that song, so of course we had to play it. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. I always appreciate it. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out the past programs if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page on over at listenradiobristol.org. As always, I'll have today's playlist, some more materials about some things we talked about from the show up there. So go check it out. Special thanks again to Steve Quillen for taking the time to speak with me today about the Grandfather Mountain Highland Games and Scottish history. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Steve. Folks, again, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Tony Doman, and I hope you'll join me right here next time.